This week on Retronauts, we discuss the Kanto Imperative. Hello, welcome back to Retronauts. This is your host, Diamond Fight, and I'm here in Japan. But wait! Aren't I often in Japan? It's true, I live here. But no, today we are here in Tokyo because it's time for Tokyo Game Show. Again, it's 2025, it's the annual show, and I'm out here, although officially we're in Chiba. Who cares about that? Out here playing games, talking to people. And that's what today's episode is about. I'll have some voices that you know discussing what we've seen here at the Tokyo Game Show. And I've got another long-form interview with a person you might not know, but I think you'll be happy to hear from them as they talk about their work and their passion for arcade games. And what could be more retro than arcade games in 2025? I ask you, nothing's more retro than arcade games in 2025. But relax, take a seat. I will transition from this outdoor location to a different audio segment, and we'll start the show. It's us. It's here. We're here outside the Tokyo Game Show in not Tokyo. Dirty secret. They tell you it's Tokyo Game Show. We're not in Tokyo. Not at all, really.
No, sir.
But I'm here with a voice that Retronauts fans should already know, Mr. John Linneman of Digital Foundry.
Hello, Diamond.
Hello. Good to see you.
Good to be here.
By the way, Digital Foundry, Diamond Fight, same initials.
Oh, my gosh.
What are we going to do conversation-wise about this? How are we going to solve this problem?
I think we're just going to have to agree that they're both excellent and just continue to go with it.
I noticed that solution doesn't involve me getting any money, but I'll let it go. You didn't pick... Did you pick the name?
No.
Okay. Then my qualm's not with you. Anyway, so John, welcome back to Japan. You're a TGS veteran, no?
Yeah. Been around.
I know I've seen you here at the show's past, and you've probably been to the show even more times than that. So, first impressions. We were here on day one, so first impressions. What do you think of Tokyo Game Show this year? What's your impression?
The first thing I noticed is that, one, they changed the layout of some of the typical processes.
So
you come in a little bit different. And then immediately I'm like, wait, it's way more crowded this year.
Yes.
Like, it's business day, and I'm like, what is going on here? It feels almost like the first public day.
Yeah, it's
getting close.
I know that there is a way to just buy entrance on these public. Like, it's a different... It's a more expensive ticket. But I think you can just buy a ticket. And, yeah, this morning, you know, I went in with the first few people, media people, at 10 a.m. And when I came back out around 11 a.m. to sort of catch my breath and get a snack, there was a huge line of people, like, inside the hall, but waiting to get into the actual, like, TGS show floor.
I saw that.
Like, hundreds and hundreds of people. And I'm like, what? Why are these people lined up here? It's the doors have been open for an hour. That many people were waiting to get in here? It's... kind of frightening.
I can't say I've seen it on a business day, but I have heard that all of the other days are completely sold out this year. So there's going to be quite a crowd. So if you didn't already get a ticket, you probably won't be able to make it. And if you did, you're going to be waiting in line and being crammed within a lot of people.
Yeah, I've heard someone else said that was sold out. I don't know what that means. I've never heard that.
I don't know. I've heard this from multiple people now. So I'm pretty sure that there must be something going on with that. But either way, they may have reached capacity. Which doesn't seem fun.
Just all the more reason to avoid Saturday and Sunday at this Bakuhara Messe Convention Center, if at all possible.
Absolutely, man, absolutely. But today was fun. There was some nice stuff to see, nice people to meet. I've enjoyed it, as usual. It's warm, but not as warm as it's been in the past.
Yes. Thankfully, Japanese summer just, like, ended last week, and now it's just kind of like...
Moderate.
It's just warm.
It's just warm.
Yes.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's cool, man. So we had a bunch of appointments. But as always, as is tradition, we kick it off by stopping by the indie area.
Yeah.
Because one thing I love about the show is that you have the indie space, lots of developers just chilling by their game, right? There's no PR fence. There's no, like, barrier to entry here. You just, like, plop down and you're like, hey, here's a game. And they're just, like, often just standing right there ready to talk to you. And it's pretty darn awesome. But because of our tighter schedule this year, I didn't just play that many. The first one I actually checked out, weirdly enough, was a new version of Hashire Hebereke.
Oh, the old Sunsoft game, right?
Yeah. So it's a Super Famicom game originally. It's back, but it's with, I'm forgetting the name of the publisher, but it's actually being done by a Korean developer.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like it was just licensed out from Sunsoft. So I have friends at Sunsoft still. And so this is not really their internal project. Unlike Hebereke 2, where they did work with a partner developer, but it was more closely internal. This seems to be like an external thing, but it's really cool because they actually captured the look of the game, but in high resolution widescreen.
Oh!
In a way that doesn't look cheap. It doesn't look like a cheap Flash game. It actually genuinely looks cool. It's sort of a top-down, isometric, on-foot racing game with items and the cute characters from Hebereke. So that was fun.
Yeah.
And then we did a little bit of merch shopping, and I was very happy to find a t-shirt and bag for the, let's see if you're familiar with this, the Wagyanizer.
The Wagyanizer?
Yeah. So you know Wagyan Land, right? The Namco series.
Yeah.
With the little cute kaiju.
Okay, yeah.
Right? It was, so I listened to a podcast about this recently, another good podcast, if I may say, by Bright Bit Brothers.
Okay.
It's a Japanese podcast.
Sure.
And they talked about this. And I've played a lot of the Wagyan games, but what I didn't realize is it actually started off in, like, game centers here in, like, a cute little cage, and it would kind of talk back at you and everything, and people could kind of toy with it. But they did actually release a toy called the Wagyanizer.
Wow.
And it's shaped like Wagyan's head, but it's also in the shape of a gun. And the idea is you point it at people, pull the trigger, and it records something, and you click it over to playback mode, and you pull the trigger, and it plays a sound back. So it's like a sound gun.
What?
Right?
So it's like the thing in Home Alone 2.
A little bit, yeah, but it's like straight up like a gun. And then they went on to make the series, and it's a cool little series, especially Wagyan Paradise, which the director of Klonoa and Ninja Gaiden made.
Wow.
And some of the enemies that appear in Klonoa 1 actually first appeared in Wagyan Paradise.
Wow, we're unlocking secrets here.
But why didn't it become big with the import community? Because, well, one big reason, it has Shiritori sections as boss fights.
Oh.
Which means if you can't read Japanese, you cannot play it.
Is it timed?
It is extremely timed.
Oh, geez. Look, okay, I'll try to explain. So, Shiritori is a Japanese word game.
Yes.
It's incredibly common.
Very common. They love it.
Basically, it's like you say a word, and then you take the last character of that word, and you say a new word. Yep. And the idea is it's a back and forth. Usually, it's like to a beat. Sometimes you might have a theme, like, okay, we're doing food today.
And yes, like animals today.
Yeah, and like, kids do this all the time. Adults do this all the time. They do it on TV all the time. But, yeah, that would be really, like, time-consuming to localize, and it wouldn't be as interesting because, like,
just doesn't work the same.
Yeah, because, like, you could do this. You could do the, like, with a letter. Like, oh, if I say apple, then you pick one with an E, but, like, that's not the same as picking a character that has a...
And here they have all the images of the animals or objects or whatever in a large grid of, like, you know, like, 4x4 or 5x5. And it's just the picture, and they reveal, like, the letter at the bottom, and you have to pick from there.
Oh,
and it's super timed. And if you get it wrong, you gotta redo the whole stage.
Ugh.
So, basically, it is hard. Like, I've managed to finish some of those games, and they're quite fun, but if you can't do it, you're missing out. But either way, you can enjoy the Wagyanizer itself, and, of course, the t-shirt and goods that they are selling here, which is awesome.
I have to Google this toy now and then get a picture in my head. Maybe I've seen it and didn't realize
it's
what it was.
It's very funny. I think it shows up in Wagyan Land, possibly.
Huh.
But it's a fun little thing. But that was kind of like Namco's old mascot. It's a fun little series. But after that, what did we do? I did play... So I did get a chance to play some Sega stuff today.
Yeah.
The big one, I guess, was Like a Dragon series. They're bringing back the third game from PlayStation 3.
Right.
The Kiwami version.
Yeah, Kiwami 3. Yeah.
And it looks great. I mean, it seems like they're still using the Dragon engine. 60 frames per second. Played on PS5. Beautiful direction as usual. Like, nobody does... You know the scenes where it's like the dudes are like, all right, like, are you really ready to do this? They zoom in, he puts his arm up by the top of his shirt, and then it's just in one fell swoop, woof, rips the shirt off, and you got the tattoo on the back, and he's all muscled up, and you know it's about to get real. Nobody does that better than that studio.
Yeah, that I feel like that's going to be a significant one, just because I remember when Yakuza 3 first came out in English, it was immediately sort of... became a news story how much Sega just cut out of the English version, because they weren't confident,
right,
or they
right.
weren't
sure,
sure about, you know, sales numbers, and like they cut a whole bunch of stuff out, like, you know, just mini, like, side content, but it's like it's stuff that you always see in the Yakuza games. And I feel like now that we have our Yakuza Renaissance, Ryuga Gotoku-sans.
Yeah.
I think it's great that they're going back to Kiwami. It's like, okay, we're going to do Kiwami. We're doing three, but we're doing Kiwami 3.
Kiwami
and
style.
You got to assume they're going to have everything and more. Like, even they're going to add kitchen sinks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I guess at this rate, they'll probably end up doing a Kiwami 4 and 5. Probably not 6, though, because that feels like that's too new. That's already on the Dragon Engine. So that was that. That was fun. What else here? We played Dench Attack, which was announced back at Key 3, or wait, no, that would have been the Gamescom show.
Yeah?
I don't know. Have you seen this?
Dench Attack?
It's literally called Dench Attack. It's
yes. Where is that? I got to fly that.
It's in the Indie Hall in the upper spot.
Okay.
Because they actually added a new area for indies on the upper deck, which is usually open for, like, meetings and, like, just chilling. But this year, they cram more indies in there.
Oh, gee. I didn't even look. I just assumed it. Yeah, I assumed it was, right, like, you know, like a snack bar or something.
It usually is. But this time, it's there. It rules. They've got, like, T-Lopes and others in the soundtrack. It's basically, like, what if you had, like, 3D Boost Sonic meets, like, Tony Hawk, except for you play as a train.
Yes.
You're, like, wall riding, jumping tracks, drifting around corners, multi-track drifting's in.
Yes. I ever since I saw that video, I was like, yes, I want to try that. That is here. That's awesome. I'm going to find that
today. That's probably the coolest thing I've seen at the show.
Oh.
It's so freaking cool, man. I love what they're doing with it. I'm super stoked. After that, though, I went to Koei Tecmo and played Neo 3. So this one is really interesting because they're switching more to a multi sort of regional but larger open map design this time.
Yeah?
Not exactly like, but closer to something like an Elden Ring.
Oh.
And so, like, that means that things like, you know, if you get stuck on a really hard boss, you can actually go and... go somewhere else, go explore, get some weapons, level up, then come back and face them. So it kind of changes the flow of it a little bit, but at its core, it's still Neo. They added a ninja class option now,
sure.
So you got ninjas in there, you know, Team Ninja. It's 60 frames a second, looks great on the PS5. I really like how it played so far. I'm eager to see more. The new big area they had in the demo was like a snowy region, which looked great. It's still their own in-house technology. I don't know. It's worth checking out. After that, though, my buddy Thomas and I here, we got to go interview people on the Neo team. And the main guy for the Dynasty Warrior series.
Oh.
So, and that was very fun because it was my first time doing, I got to do the full interview in Japanese because I did not have a translator person.
Oh my goodness.
So I did it all and it was stressful at first, but they turned out to be so darn nice that we had a great time. And lots of interesting info comes out there, especially, weirdly enough, on Dynasty Warriors' side, because that dude, man, he's been there so long. He was involved in the original Shin San Gokumuso back
okay.
in the day.
Okay.
And, like, talking about back on the PS2 when they're just like, wait, like, one of the main programmers figured out, like, wait, like, we were just going to do, like, a fighting game, a sequel to the actual Dynasty Warriors, right?
Right, because the first game is just a fighting game.
Right, yeah. And then they're like, we can actually do, like, this AI stuff, like, coded a system that can handle all these dudes on the screen. It's like, what if we did something with that? And sure enough, they came up with this like idea and it worked. And the fellow we met today, actually, he did like all the level design and UI and stuff from that original game by himself with insane amounts of work. And I had to ask, though, because I always wondered, why is it Dynasty Warriors 2, but then it's just Shin San Gokumuso in Japan, right? They always were staggered.
Yeah.
And he said back then it was just a different team that decided what to do with the overseas versions, and they're the ones that did that.
Right.
And the development team didn't have anything to do with that. And he's happy that finally with Dynasty Warriors Origins, or San Gokumuso Origins, I guess. I don't know what they call it. But they're both Origins now.
Yes.
So, like, they're finally together. No more staggered releases for these guys, which is funny. But
yeah, I mean, if you go back to like the 90s and 2000s, there are a lot of cases of games that just didn't get released abroad, and then a sequel does. So someone in America or Europe is like, okay, well, we can't put a number in this. We'll just pretend it's the first game, and then a series breaks out, and all of a sudden you've got a disparity. But usually they figure it out a few games in. It's like, all right, let's just bring these together.
Like, you know? Final Fantasy VII is the famous one. They're just like, oh, screw it, it's seven.
Yeah, and retroactively they you know, fixed what was going on. But yeah, Dynasty Warriors
never marched forward.
Yeah,
it was always forward like that. And then they also announced that they're doing that remake version of the second game, which is the third, called 3 in North America,
right?
Which they did after this. And he didn't actually want to make that, he said. It was, like, not something that was too interested in doing, and it was kind of embarrassing to go back to the work, but he said, like, everything, like, from Dynasty Warriors 7 and earlier, and before 7, you can't play it on modern systems at all.
Right.
Fans have been asking for this. So, like, the one that the fans seemingly wanted the most was Dynasty Warriors 3. And so they went back to it and decided to, like, really... it's not just, like, a graphics remake. It's, like, a full-on, like... they're actually making gameplay changes, control changes, and trying to make it more modern and work within the context of, like, 2025. So that's pretty darn cool, I thought. So, yeah. And then after that, man, there's just a lot of transit time here.
Yeah.
You know? Like, walking between buildings, it's crazy busy in there. We're going to go see some other stuff soon. I think the Samurai Pizza Cats game after this.
Yeah, I did. I saw that.
How was it?
No, I saw the booth.
Oh, you saw that.
And I was like, oh, there is that game. That exists, doesn't it?
I have to make time for it. Because let's face it, it looks cool. Also, I think Black Finger Jet is under that label now.
Oh, is it?
You remember it was 2 years ago they were here with the video.
That's the former Metal Slug guy. Oh, I didn't see that game. I gotta look for that.
It didn't show up last year, but it might be here this year. Or at least that label now, like Red Dune Games, I think it is.
Yes.
Something like that. They've taken that over.
Okay.
They're getting it made. So it looks cool, but clearly they still had a long way to go.
Yeah, actually, I was in that booth today walking around, and I saw a pretty impressive-looking Metroidvania with some good pixel art. I believe the title is Silent Planet.
Okay.
And, yeah, very much. Like, you can tell the character and the movement is very Symphony of the Night inspired. You know, like, the character sort of stops for a second and turns around. And the space between, like, areas is like a CD loading, like a CD loading holder, like complete with a CD icon. Like they know what they're doing.
Is that in the indie hall?
No, it's in the Red Dunes.
Oh, like, it's in the Red Dunes.
Yeah, it's in the Red Dunes booth area.
Dang, Red Dunes is hot then.
Okay. Yeah, it's gotta be early early on because, like, the demo, like, half, there was no music, and, like, half the sound effects didn't even work. So it's just, you know, it's clearly a work in progress, so I'm guessing 2026 at the earliest. But, you know, awesome, initial though. Impressions, pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I will definitely check that out as well.
Yeah.
I wasn't familiar with their game, but Red Dunes, I mean. But, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff in there. I kind of just moved on, but, yeah.
That's sweet. Heck, yeah. Do you see anything else that caught your eye?
I mean, the first day has been mostly just kind of, like, finding the most busiest booths and trying to get in there today before it gets too crowded, but I don't know. I know I wanted to go see what was going on with Konami's Silent Hill. There's no demo for Silent Hill F, but there is some kind of space you can go into, and if you go in there, they give you something, and there's a bunch of cosplayers, some really good cosplayers outside the booth handing out, like, flyers. Like, they got these ladies who are doing, like, the contortion stuff and,
oh boy,
like, sort of shambling a little bit.
I can, like, report that Diamond is doing it right now.
Yeah.
Very skillfully.
They're wearing masks. It's really it's really impressive. I think I reshared someone's picture on Blue Sky of the cosplay girls. Because, like, and I say girls because they're wearing, like, schoolgirl outfits. They're probably, you know, they're probably in their 20s. It doesn't even matter. It's fine. They're professionals. They're professionals is who they are. That's what
exactly,
I'm talking about.
Exactly, exactly. Oh, that's interesting. I think the game is actually out today.
Yes. As we're recording this, the game is on store shelves. And indeed, they have some kind of giveaway. If you can show them evidence that you already bought the game, I think they give you some swag.
Oh.
But I didn't buy the game yet because I'm here. I'm not going to buy the game
exactly.
now. But I do want to buy that game and play it. But
I played 3 hours back at Gamescom, and I loved it.
Yeah, I think so far the impression... Now we can actually talk about it, you know... It wasn't more than a week ago we had a big embargo brouhaha because someone just started talking about it on Reddit.
And oh, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, now it's out now, so whatever. Say whichever you want. But
yeah, I mean, that was wild because it just wasn't that clear in the document, I guess. But, like, they just kind of made this call, like, oh, I guess I can just talk about it. Which is, if you've been around, you know, that's really not how it works.
No.
Companies do not like that at all.
Yeah. Nor other reporters who maybe saw that.
I also don't like it.
Yeah. If you saw it and you were waiting and someone's like, hey, I can talk about this game, right? No, you can't.
Exactly. So that's cool. That's out. I guess the thing that always gets me, though, when we come here is, like, we're standing out front right now,
yes.
right? And you look around and it's like, oh, we got Call of Duty Black Ops 7. We got Fallout. We've got Borderlands 4.
Yeah.
All these very Western games. Got Ninja Gaiden 4 up there as well. It always strikes me. So I think Microsoft seems to always invest money in this part of the area. I saw a few. This is an Xbox.
Yes. Down at the bottom of the stairs there was a big sign. This is an Xbox, but it was a handheld, like the Rogue
right.
Ally, whatever.
The problem is I tried to play the banner and it didn't work. So I take issue with their marketing. It was not an Xbox, in fact.
Yeah, clearly the new strategy is if everything's an Xbox, then nothing is an Xbox.
Nothing is an Xbox.
We are all Xboxes,
uh-oh.
And somehow by default, they've won the console war because they've sold more units than anybody.
They sure have.
yeah, but all serious, don't give Microsoft your money at this point. Sorry. Sorry, folks. I don't want to be Captain Bring Down, but they don't deserve your money at this point in time. Maybe they'll fix things. Who knows?
Indeed. But yeah, I mean, from my end, that's about it for today. It's been a fun time so far, as usual. But
yeah.
We tend to just do a single day here because it's very tiring.
Yes,
especially if you're staying in town and you want to come out here in the morning, and it's like over an hour.
Yes, yeah. And in fact, for me, it was close to 2 hours because I went to the train station. And I was going to take the Yamanote line, which is the loop line that goes around Tokyo. And the loop line just stopped.
That's unusual.
It just stopped for about 20, 30 minutes.
That's extremely unusual.
And, you know, something happened, obviously. And I was like, you know, I left early. I thought I'd be here in a timely fashion. But then I spent 30 minutes just sort of waiting in a train station on a train.
I'm glad we took the Saikyo line, then.
Yeah. It was just... Yeah, not a great start to the show, but I made it. I'm here.
You did make it.
Yeah.
We're doing it.
Thank you for joining me here, John.
Of course.
The people of Retro House know you, but just in case, if they want to look you up on internet world, what should they look for?
Anything Digital Foundry you can find at dark1x dot blue sky whatever.
Yeah.
Various other social media stuff, but mostly over there. Check out our Patreon. We recently went independent, and all the support means a lot to us. So, you know, come hang out on the Discord. Check out youtube.com/digitalfoundry, where you can find our stuff, including a review of Silent Hill F, I think, that Oliver put up.
Okay.
So, yeah. Thanks a lot for having me.
All right. Thank you, John. I'm glad I just ran into you here.
Indeed.
Because we didn't plan this. It just kind of happened.
All right. Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
All right.
Welcome back to Retronauts' special Tokyo Game Show episode. We are here in a somewhat secluded concrete corner of the Makuhari Messe Convention Center. There's still people walking around. Don't get me wrong. You can never be truly alone at Tokyo Game Show. Not nowhere. Nowhere is safe. Not even in the toilets. There's someone. There's someone in the stall next to you. Maybe a very famous someone. You never know. But famous to me, because I've known him for about 20 years. We did the math on this. I met him about 20 years ago. Richard Eisenbeiss, back on the show. Hello, Richard.
Hello. How are you doing today, Diamond?
I'm doing all right. I'm braving this very busy Tokyo Game Show.
We're
recording this on the second day.
Right.
And the figures came out from the first day, and there were 52,000 people here yesterday. That is 10,000 more than the last year, and that was 10,000 more than the previous year. So they are...
It felt like it out there on the floor. I'm not going to lie.
It is very busy. It is very busy. Everything is... Everything fills up very quickly. I know I came back this morning hoping to get in a couple different things. Mm-hmm. And basically, you get to pick one thing you can go in and go right away. But anything other than that thing, once you go there, you're going to have to wait. Or if it's very popular,
they just close the line.
Yeah,
they
you're out of luck.
Yeah.
There are some things that were just by 10:15, you know, the doors open 10:15. Doors open 10 a.m. By 10:15, some things were just like, you cannot play this today. Try again tomorrow when there are even more people here.
right. Oh, man. Yeah, remember, these are the business days. This is literally just industry people. The main thrust of Japan hasn't come yet, and they will soon be here in mass.
Yeah. But that's the future. We're talking about things we've already done.
Yes.
That's the focus of Retronauts, things that have already happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, we're going to bend the rules a little bit because we want to talk about some games we played that I think will be interesting to the folks at home, even though all three of them are new games. Certainly, they have their own individual legacies, I would say.
Right. Absolutely.
Why don't we lead off with a little talk about Resident Evil. I've been calling it Resident Evil Reninquium, and it is not. It's still funny to me every time I say it, Reninquium. Obviously, here in Japan, it's Biohazard Reninquium. But also, I think it's funny that even when you play it, you know, the demo is multilingual because, of course, it is.
Right.
But even if you change the language setting from Japanese to English, it still says Biohazard.
And it's the same way with, like, Revelations 2 and Revelations 1, which I recently replayed. I bought them on the Japanese store, and, yeah, it's the same thing where it does that, of all the things that don't get localized.
Yeah. So you played it. I played it. I actually played it twice. We can talk about that. But you're the guest here, Richard. What happened? What happened when you went to that... Went to that scary place and met that lady.
Yeah. So I got to play it on the Switch 2, which they just announced here. And just to be clear, like, it wasn't docked, so I have no idea what it's like when you dock it and put it up on a TV. But, like, in the handheld mode, there was not a single time where I noticed, like, frame skip or anything that felt like I was losing frames or it was not powerful enough to be on the Switch 2.
Mm-hmm.
So that's... That's a really almost surprising thing. Like, I felt like I was getting the same experience. I'm sure the fidelity isn't the same. Obviously, sure. I'm not getting 4K, but, like, it played smooth. And that's, in the end, the most important thing about pretty much any game.
Absolutely.
I felt that the demo portion, which is you're basically, you wake up, you're in, like, a hallway with, like, three rooms connected to it and a metal door or a metal portcullis almost that you have to raise to get out. Mm-hmm. Like, that's it. It's very, very quickly obvious what you're supposed to do. Like, there's very good visual storytelling clues, like, oh, there's this barred door. How do you get past it? Oh, next to it is a fuse box. The fuse box is missing a fuse. It's obvious what you need to do. Oh, look, there's a key over there on that table that will open one of the rooms you couldn't go in before. You know, and then, like, in that room, oh, you find a lighter, which allows you to go into a room that was too dark to see before. And I felt like, okay, this is good survival horror. It's obvious enough of where you need to go that you're not going to get stuck. And yet it doesn't have her go, oh, man, now that I have this lighter, I can go into that dark room I went in before. Like, you don't have to have that. Like, they trust you to be smart enough to figure out that new things grant you new access to new places.
I had a fun moment, you know, because when the demo starts, you're strapped down. And there's a little video where you free yourself from this contraption. And during that experience, you knock over an IV,
yeah,
and you make a big mess. So when you're done, you can just leave the room, but you can also walk around the room and look at some stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I look back at where I was strapped, and I got like a little interaction prompt,
right?
And I looked at the broken IV and the big stain on the floor, and just text wise just says, that's a lot of blood.
Yeah.
I was like, yes.
That is all.
This is what I want. This is what I want from Resident Evil games. I want to hear. I mean, survival horror in general. I want to look at something and press a button and have that person tell me what they're looking at.
Yes. Yes. No, and I did. I actually like that because it's like the way that the line is delivered is actually really good because it's like, oh my God, I was almost dead. Like I was bleeding out kind of thing. Like that horrible realization of how close
she was
to death.
I'm pretty sure the demo is only available, like, spoken language-wise in English, right? I don't think there was a Japanese voice.
I didn't see an option for that.
Yeah, yeah.
Not that I've seen.
You could, like, the display language you could change, but I think the voices were only recorded in English.
At least so far, yeah.
So you got to hear our protagonist, freak out a little bit, curse a little bit, because, let's be honest, you're walking this tiny little hallway, you find some dead people, which, you know, whatever. But then you find something that is not dead, and it wants to eat you.
Yeah,
and sure does. I think I reacted much like she did, where I was like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, like, and like, yeah, it's like, what is this? And, like, there's nowhere to run.
Yeah, it's...
like, You have a hallway that dead ends in two places or three places, basically. Like, that was actually the thing that got me while I was playing it is, of course, this big scary monster shows up several times, right?
Yeah.
But, like, there's no loop. Like, usually in these kind of games, you have this kind of loop that you can use the loop to lose them. But this, there's no loop. It's like, you have to dead end yourself and hope it doesn't come and eat you.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that somewhat terrifying because it's just like, oh, man, like, I don't know what to do here. I guess I better hope.
And it gets around very quickly. Like, yeah. there was one case. Actually, I played the demo twice. Mm-hmm. I played it once on PlayStation 5. The staff said it was a normal piece of PS5, not Pro. And then I played it again today on the Switch 2.
Oh, okay.
And when playing it twice, I got to sort of experience the monster doing different things.
Oh.
And, like, the first time I played the game, the monster jumped out at me. I was like, oh, boy. I just ran down one hallway as far as I could, and I didn't hear any noises, and Grace sort of said to herself, like, what the hell was that? Like, she was breathing heavy. It's like, oh, the game is telling me that it's not behind me anymore. Okay. And I looked, and it was not behind me anymore. This time, when I got scared, I ran down the same hallway. Monster popped out in front of me.
Whoa, no, okay, that did not happen to me.
It popped out in front of me, forced me to run back to where I came from. And so I was kind of running back and forth a little bit. I was trying best to hide. You know, you have a crouch, and there are some objects you can sort of hide behind.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there's also an object you cannot hide behind because it's kind of a... I think it's kind of a scripted moment because she comes in there, and you're in this sort of office
yeah.
as a cart. And you can move the cart.
And you're supposed to move the cart.
Yeah, it's you're supposed puzzle. To move it because yeah. you're supposed to move it over somewhere and climb up and pick up something on a high shelf. But when she comes in there, and we're assigning gender to this monster. We just, it seems like a she.
It does seem like a she.
It's just she energy.
Long hair, nightgown.
Yeah, we didn't ask the monster's pronouns, but we're guessing here. When she comes in there, she always, and this was repeated in my two demos.
Oh, okay.
She always smacks the cart. Whether you're next to the cart or not, she will smack the cart. And when she smacks it, it goes right next to where you need it to be to climb up and get the thing.
Oh.
Yeah.
So my experience with that is like when I had the cart in about the middle of the room when she was coming. So I thought, okay, I'll use it to block line of sight and hide behind it. And when that knockback happened, so it was knocked into one corner of this very tiny room. I was knocked into the other corner. And I literally had not enough space to get out of the way of the monster. Like, I couldn't run past it. And I literally just stopped moving. I couldn't move left. I couldn't move right. I was stuck in a corner. And I ended up okay, I guess I'm dying. I guess I lose this demo. And then she picks me up, bites my head. And then when she put me down, I had just enough space to run by suddenly. And I was like, okay, well, at least I didn't dead end in the dumbest way possible. But yeah, it was one of those things where it kind of left me going, well, what was I supposed to do? And I still feel like I don't quite have an answer of what I was supposed to do in that situation. Yet I'm sure it's there, and I just somehow didn't see it.
I look forward to figuring out how the creature works, because clearly it has different behaviors. It makes noises like it's sniffing.
Yes.
So I think there must be some kind of like sense of smell. There's definitely hearing. It definitely hears you because when you're exploring the room, there's a scripted like thing falls down, makes a noise, and then it comes right back to the room to get you.
Right.
I think it can see you, but also I don't think it likes light so much.
Like, yeah, that was my question. I was wondering if I should whip out the lighter. Like, is the lighter hindrance or help?
Yeah, I wonder about that too. Like, whenever I ran away from it, I put the lighter away.
Me too.
Because I assumed it was going to follow the light. But I also noticed that it tends to hang out in the dark. And if you do escape, when the demo ends, if you actually open the gate,
yeah.
I managed to get out there. And when it followed me out into the room, which a very well-lit room, it was kind of like sizzling a little bit.
Oh.
Like it didn't like the light, but it still like...
Could do it.
Did monster stuff. So it was like, it didn't, you know, it's not a vampire. It didn't, you know, it didn't melt or anything.
My only complaint really about it is the second time or you encounter it, like in this room that where I said I ran past it and I escaped, you know, I just booked it. And I was booking it to as far away as I knew how to go, which is a room with a fuse box in it. And I ran to that room. But the fact of the matter is, like I didn't go all the way there. I stopped at the hallway, and I waited to see if it was going to come around the corner. And it never did. But the problem is, where it was a dead end. Like, so I just waited and waited and waited, and I was like, it's got to be in there. There's no other way out, and it's giant. And then I go into the room after a while, and yeah, it's not there. And I was kind of like, so, I mean, this isn't like Alien Isolation where the alien's going through the ducts. There is no ducts.
It does have some viability in that it makes holes certain places.
It does. I think. But like there was no hole,
right?
Or anything like that. And so I was kind of like confused by it because like it should have been trapped still in that room. I should not have been able to go to that room. Logically, it was stupid for me to have gone to that room because it should still be there.
Yeah.
And so I kind of like that. That's my only real minor complaint is like. It's not playing by the rules of, like, reality, which is scary, but also, like, counterintuitive for a Resident Evil game.
Because
they're monsters, not ghosts.
Right. I'm very curious because, yes, actually, the monster in general has a very supernatural vibe to it. You know, it is not a zombie. It is not a tyrant. It looks like a freaky ghost lady.
With a giant hand.
Yeah. So... I'm very curious what happens in the full game. I'm very much looking forward to it. Also, one reason I played it twice is I wanted to see, you know, like the other recent first-person Resident Evil games that were made to be first-person, there's a third-person option. And here, the demo here at TGS, you can choose to do either one. So I ended up playing it twice, so I wanted to do both. And they do. The game feels very different, whether you're first-person or third-person. I think the first-person really... matches the vibe they're going for in that, you know, you're walking down a hallway, which honestly it's not a PT situation, but I had like a PT vibe where it's like, oh boy, I'm walking this hallway. There's some flickering lights. I don't know what's around this corner. I'm scared. And certainly when the monster first appears, it's in a first-person cutscene.
Yes.
That is very much camera-framed around the fact that you can only see a certain portion of the screen.
But in third-person, what? It's like obvious from the start that big monster there, or what?
No, it just, it's, if you play in third-person, the cutscene is still first-person.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
When you're playing the game and running around, you're third-person.
Oh.
Also, they're doing that thing again where if you're running around, her hair is always just sort of like covering her face. So even though you get cutscenes and you know exactly what this lady looks like,
yeah,
in third person, the camera is always firmly behind you, and her hair is always sort of like this she got this little bob, curls. So you can't see her face, which is, in my opinion, a little weird, because if you play any other Resident Evil game with a third person view, you get a, you know who you're playing. We all know what Leon looks like. We all know what Claire looks like. This is a lady that we see in cutscenes, so we know what she looks like. But then when you're playing, it's kind of conspicuously obscured, which was a little weird.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But, I mean, I've heard similar kind of things about, like, when they released, like, the director's cut thing of Village, of Resident Evil 8, where they added in the third person into that mode. It was a very similar kind of thing, where, like, game clearly designed for first person, but third person is an option now, and it kind of messes with the vibe. Like, it's still playable and might be fun in different ways, but
I think they've realized at this point that by doing both, they simply
make everyone happy.
They reach more players than if they only did one. But I feel like the game, as I played it, really feels like they meant this to be first person.
Yes.
So, you know, if you're at home, you play it how you want to play it. But my suggestion to you is play it the first person, because clearly they want you to be locked into this lady's eyes as she, you know, runs around hallways, opens drawers, flicks on light switches. And it's, definitely freaky. Definitely it's, there's no combat in the demo. There's no weapons in the demo. The only thing that you can possibly get is, like, you get, like, some glass bottles.
That you can throw. I guess which are supposed to be sound distractions, right?
I think so, yes. Because but it only works if the thing can't see you. Because I definitely tried one where the monster was right in front of me, and I was like, oh, glass bottle, go! And I threw it past the monster, and the monster's like, did not even turn its head. It's like, no, I see you. Come here. It's time to bite. It's biting time. Bite time.
Fantastic.
Let's move on to another Capcom game that's here at the show.
Yeah.
It's got a lot of hype because it's not part of an established franchise, although some fans have speculated if it started life as some other kind of game. I don't know. But it's hard sci-fi Pragmata. Pragmata? How do you
pronounce
it, Richard?
That's how I've called it, is Pragmata, but I actually have no idea. Like Stigmata.
Exactly. Yeah. There's no bloody hands, though. You're some kind of spaceman wearing a spacesuit.
Mm.
You've got a little girl who is,
I guess. She's supposed to be an android, right?
She's got
to
be some kind of, she's got some kind of computer powers. We don't know if she's, augmented or she's got robot guts. We don't know what's happening here. But we know she can hack stuff. She can point her hand at things and make machines do funny business. And her eyes, she's got some funny eye stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
And in the demo that I played, you're just like, you're in this base, which, it's kind of a generic, like, space base kind of thing. But as you're exploring around, you're going back and forth, you're opening locks, you're opening new paths, you're moving different platforms that you can sort of climb up on and jump around. And you're shooting stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But why don't you tell the audience about the shooting? Because the shooting is very different.
Well, yeah. So, like, just before that, though, like, I wanted, like, this game is, despite what it looks like, it is very much built on the framework of a Souls-like.
Yeah.
You have, instead of bonfires, you have escape hatches which lead back to the safe room. And you go down those, and then you can return to that same point. And, you know, that's where you level up, and you, you know, get new skills, and redo your stats, and kind of stuff like that. Although, it's not really stats, it's more like, you know, level up a weapon, and give yourself an extra thing of healing, and make your pistol do more, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's that kind of stuff, and then you go back to it. And then, of course, all the enemies respawn, because it's a bonfire. It's a Dark Souls bonfire, only with sci-fi coat of paint. But the reason I think that's important before when we come to talk about like the gunfighting is it's also very Souls-like in the combat, despite the fact that you're using a gun and not a thing. And I know there's Souls-likes like Remnant or whatever that are gun-based, but like this is so it's a kind of a very slow-based combat because every battle you start by hacking. You've got to do the hacking minigame with the girl, so you're using your face buttons to hack, and you're just playing a game of Snake.
Yeah, basically. Except if the thing doesn't move, it's like you're basically moving a cursor on a, like, you aim at something, and you basically lock onto that thing, and then a little UI thing pops up, and so while it's, you know, it's still, the time doesn't freeze, the thing is still moving around.
Right, that's the important bit.
But you get to basically use the face buttons to sort of manipulate this cursor around in a Snake-like fashion, and you want to get to a little node, and once you get there, the thing suddenly, like, yeah. Somehow it's like you push a button and it's like, oh, I've popped up my insides. Right. Oh, how embarrassing.
So what there is on the grid, there'll be certain debuffs. Like, I don't know how far you got into it. I luckily had 30 minutes with it.
Okay.
So I got a bit farther. But there's certain debuffs, like one, but the main debuff they give you at the beginning is it's a little blue thing. And what it is if you pass the snake through there, it will pop open their armor.
Oh, okay.
And then there's a green power button, which activates the hack. So that's where you need to end your hacking.
Mm-hmm.
But later on, there was one like a yellow shield that would also lower defenses.
I saw that one, yeah.
Right. So you could go through, you go blue, yellow, and you know, you snake around and you end up in green, and then it pops open their armor, and now you can actually do damage.
Yeah, it's a really interesting system because obviously you're trying to fight, and you know the things are always moving. You know, none of this like pauses the game at all.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I want to, you know, push as many buttons as possible to make the enemy as weak as possible so I can deal damage. But also, the more time you spend in that thing, the less time you can, you know,
right.
The less time you're spending actually shooting at it.
Right. You're really dual focusing. You're trying to solve a relatively easy puzzle, but at the same time, you're trying to dodge something trying to kill you.
Yeah.
And I found that to be, like, surprisingly fun.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot of hacking stuff that's not just that. There were other hacks
The other hacking mini games.
Yeah. They were like, you know, push buttons in a sequence.
And doors.
Or flipping little levers that appear.
Mm-hmm.
And they all control a little bit differently, and it really does. It's kind of amazing. And I guess just because, you know, we've played games for a long time, we know how the controller works. It's surprisingly sensible, given how many things you're doing at the same time. Like, your left thumb is obviously moving your character around. Your right thumb is obviously pushing buttons, but also, like, you've got the camera there because you've got to look for monsters or whatever.
Mm, that's true.
I think the right bumper button is like a dodge button.
It's a boost.
Yeah, it's like a quick boost.
Jet boost, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, if you're... So I fought a boss, and, like, the boss charges at you.
Yep.
And when that happens, you definitely want a boost to get out of its way.
Right, right.
And then it's like, oh, now it's behind you. Then you got to quick turn around, try to hack it again, and it has a weak spot on its back. But it's not, like... Actually, that's one thing I noticed. Once you hack something and you unlock it, the UI sort of highlights points on the robots. They're all robots, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are weak points. Because the boss had a big, like, tank on its back. Mm-hmm. And that was always, whenever I hacked it, the tank was glowing, and I felt like I did more damage when I shot it.
Yeah, for me, when I noticed that on different enemies, too, once they're hacked and once they're opened, it didn't glow until I shot it, and then it glowed.
Okay.
And so it was like, you have hit a weak point. I am showing you, you have hit a weak point. And then it would stay glowing for several seconds.
Yeah. Also, a lot of numbers. It's one of those games where you shoot things and numbers pop out, I always love shooting and having numbers pop out.
Yes.
It's a big appeal for me.
Big numbers makes you feel good.
Yes.
Right? That's a simple simple arithmetic right there. But yeah, like, and that's the thing though. But it is, I feel though, it was slow paced enough that like even when they started throwing two or three enemies at me at once, like it almost made the puzzle a little more complicated. It was like, who do I hack first?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do I hack the big scary thing first? Probably not. I should take out the faster ones with ranged weapons rather than this. And then you do it like that. And then there's also the other weapons you find. Your base weapon is just a pistol, but it recharges automatically. And then you'll find other weapons that have a limited number of shots that do not recharge that you'll need to pick up and find later.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have your good old Dark Souls heal. You have your health flask, which will give you one heal and till you go back to base and rest, and it, you know, or till you go to the bonfire and rest and get it back.
Yeah.
And you can get more charges of it. And all
that's
that
another
shit.
Thing you have to basically manipulate, because while you're, you know, your left thumb, the left stick is moving your character, you also got to drift over to the D-pad to change guns.
Yes.
Because some of the guns are very specific uses. Like, there's basically like a slow gun that creates an area of effect.
The net
that
gun,
slows everything down. But more than once, I used that to slow everyone down and then hack them. But then I shot it again. It's like, no. Once they're slowed and you hack them, you got to change guns because then you want to do the actual damage.
Right. And like the bigger ones, like your pistol, like I even upgraded the pistol 3 times while I was playing. And so it was actually doing a fair amount of damage. But even then, like the point of when you get there's kind of some big hulky guys.
Yes.
When you open them up, you're supposed to be using the shotgun.
Yes, absolutely. I tried to use the pistol on that thing and I unloaded like 2 clips of pistol ammo into it. I was like, you know, I just found the shotgun. Let's try that. And then one shotgun blast basically like knocked it to pieces. Just boom.
Yeah, and it's like, okay. but that's also the thing. It's like, okay, these very specific things for like, oh, is there a group? You want to fire the net gun. Is there, you know, a big strong guy? Okay, you want to hack him and then shoot him with the shotgun. And the pistol is your normal small enemy weapon and your, I stupidly wasted all my other ammo weapon. So I've got to try to get this done.
Mm.
And I felt that the jet boost on trigger on R1 was a bit awkward. But you need all the face buttons for hacking, so I get it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it a lot. I was like, okay, I think I could really enjoy this game. I just hope that there's things get more complex, like the mini games get more complex in some way. Already 30 minutes in, the snake game was solved as far as I was concerned. I was able to do that real, real quick. I had no issues. But, you know, like, there could be infinite. Maybe it's every different type of enemy by the end will have a different hacking mini game, which could be really cool.
Yeah. But just overall, I think really strong demo and really got me intrigued because, you know, I've seen the trailers for this game. I wasn't particularly excited about it. Like, oh, okay, it looks like a third-person shooter. But having played it now, I was like, oh, okay, this is something different. It feels different.
That said, my only complaint is I really do not like the kid's voice. It feels like a woman pretending to be a little girl and ending up as, like, a teenager.
Oh.
Even though the little girl is supposed to be, like, 10 or 9.
Yeah, this is a very tiny little girl, absolutely. Yeah.
But as I call it, this is science fiction BioShock where you're the big daddy. Like, that's what it is. You have the magical little girl on your back, and you walk around as big, strong armor man and beat everything up. Yeah.
Yeah. You're definitely a guy.
Oh,
yeah. We don't know if you have robot parts inside you or not, but you're definitely more human than the girl.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because you're wearing a suit.
Any hacking.
Yeah, you're wearing a suit. And if your suit gets in trouble, I guess, you know, you just, that's it.
Yeah. But yeah, a lot of fun. But yeah, it's what reminds me most of Souls games or Dead Space.
Yeah.
Because the kind of a slower paced game.
Right.
Like, not the horror element, but like the kind of way combat works in Dead Space. The right tool for the right job, you know.
Yeah. And even then when the little girl like fixes your suit, it kind of looks like Isaac's like little laser gun thing.
Right.
Like it's like it unfolds and like shoots little laser beams, and like somehow these are good laser beams that fix you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. Exactly.
Oh, you said it for good. Oh, good. This feels wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah. And I like that, like, as you play, like, as you're just walking around, like, in some time idle a little bit, like, she does, like, she's on your back and she'll, like, actually start tweaking your suit and little things. Like, it looks like she's repairing stuff as well, like, while she just has idle time. And I thought, that's kind of cool, better than just, like, sitting static on your back.
Speaking of hair, though, the little girl has got very long hair.
Oh, yes.
And, again, it's a demo version. Obviously, they're still working on it. But it's funny to me how often the hair just seemed to be, like, flopping around, like, nonstop. Like, I think they might want to, I don't know, tighten up the physics on her follicles there. She's got very active hair.
Yeah, actually, that's very true, especially, like, if you're using the jet boost. Like, yeah. But, I mean, it does, I think it's trying to make it convey motion more.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Maybe they're doing it a little down. Tony, yeah. Just a little down. Just a little.
I mean, you know, it's better that than having, you know, giving her, like, a plastic, you know, wig that's sort of, you know, latched onto her head in five places. But certainly the opening cutscene, at least when I played it, the opening cutscene, like, she just looks at you and, like, poof, and all of a sudden it's like a shampoo commercial. Do robot girls use shampoo? That's the question, listeners. Write that into us. Tell us your theories. Do robot girls use shampoo, or is their hair made of something less manageable?
Or more manageable?
Or is it just some sort of fiber optics? You know,
probably.
Maybe.
Oh, it's my solar power generator.
She is blonde.
She is blonde.
Well, I want to talk about one more game that you brought to my attention this morning, Richard, because I really haven't heard much about this game. But it's clearly got a lot of attention. You know, as I mentioned at the top of this segment, I didn't walk to this booth first thing in the morning. And when I did walk to this booth at like 10:20 or so, it was clear that no one else was getting into this booth today. Nobody.
Yeah. Yep. They closed the line. In fact, I went to it straight away. But anyway, so the game we're talking about is Ananta. Which is, I think the Japanese title is Mugendai Ananta.
Right.
And what Ananta is so it was originally announced, I think, a little more than like 2 years ago as Project Mugen.
Okay.
And that original trailer looks almost nothing like what we're getting now.
Yeah.
And then 9 months ago, they put out their first big What Is This trailer. And what it was, the trailer was basically the GTA 6 trailer, but with anime girls and like SCP style monsters. And it was very clear that what they were saying visual design is, hey, anime Grand Theft Auto, that's what we are making. There is absolutely nothing to be confused about here. That's what we're making. And then also you get a little bit of web slinging in it, that even in that original trailer. And it was like, also Spider-Man. And yeah, so this, they released a new trailer, and the first hands-on demo here at TGS. And yeah, it's basically all the combat is Spider-Man or Batman Arkham Asylum, like that kind of, you have a counter button or a block button that turns into a counter button. And then you have a, you know, your normal just attack, which is context sensitive based on where you're putting the thumbstick towards. And that's who you hit. And yeah, so, you know, everybody who's said like, oh yeah, like, you know, it looks like Watch Dogs meets Grand Theft Auto meets Spider-Man meets all this stuff. That's exactly what it is. It is like unabashedly, the main character has basically Venom's powers from Spider-Man 2. Like that's, or the, you know, the symbiote suit powers from Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
And like, it's an interesting thing because like, you know, I've heard people like kind of badmouth it. And then I'm just like, well, you can't copyright a fighting system in a game. Like it's not like, oh, we got to pretend that Neo no longer exists because Dark Souls exists.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, you can have games based on a very similar kind of system and have them be good. And the fact that we just haven't had a Spider-Man clone or haven't had a, recently haven't had too many GTA clones. You know, I mean, we had Saints Row back in the day, but we haven't had anything really super GTA like recently. You know, I don't think it's bad. I think it's like, why not look at what went right in other games and do it, right? Like, why reinvent the wheel for no reason?
Did the demo give you any sense of kind of story stuff, or was it just like an open sandbox kind of thing?
So the demo was two parts.
Okay.
The first part is you can actually find it on YouTube, and like it's, I think they called it their, not their gameplay trailer, but it's like a 10 minute piece of gameplay. Uh-huh. And that's exactly what the first part of the demo was at TGS. And it, yeah, it just starts off like you come out of a bar, you're attacked by a gang of thugs, you beat them in Spider-Man / Arkham Asylum combat, and then you get picked up by a random cat girl.
Okay.
In a Lamborghini.
Sure.
And you go into a driving sequence out of Grand Theft Auto where she's driving, you're shooting your machine gun to take out the cars that are chasing you. At one point, you get knocked out of the car into the air and you land in the driver's seat. So now you're driving and she's, you know, in the passenger seat, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, it's then in the end, you know, you do this whole car chase thing. And when it ends, you find out that the cat girl is basically the chief of the local SCP.
Uh-huh.
And has been looking for you to scout you. Because you apparently did something crazy on a like social media video fighting SCP style monsters.
Right.
And like that's all that demo story was. And that's the first half of the demo. The second half is they allowed you to free reign. And so, yeah, they just drop you into the city. And I only had a few minutes left of my time because the story obviously takes a certain amount of time. And
sure.
They wouldn't let you go directly into free play. You had to do the story first. And sure. I didn't want to do it, but, you know, whatever.
Okay.
And so, yeah, like, first you're the guy, the main character. I did some web-slinging, you know? Like, it was, you hold one of the shoulder buttons and you web-sling. You press two of the shoulder buttons together. You shoot a web forward and connect to a light pole. Like it, I was like, oh, I know how to play this. I have played Spider-Man. Okay, cool. And then I decided to swap over to Taffy, which is the bunny girl you see in all the commercials for her or for trailers for the game, and she plays completely different.
Yeah.
And what's great is the it does that thing that would happen in Grand Theft Auto when you'd five when you'd switch characters. It zooms up into the stratosphere and then zooms down on the person and they're in a car or doing something.
Right.
Well, she is playing hooky. She's supposed to be working and she's just sitting in a room playing video games. And you get like this cool conversation between her and the main character where she's like, "Oh yeah, no, I'm totally on it," and she's like, "Oh man, I thought I was, you know, screwed," kind of thing. And the cool thing is, in front of me is a window. I'm sure I was supposed to jump out that window.
Yeah.
Like, it's a giant bay window. it clearly can be opened. I'm like, I'm supposed to jump out that window. I turned around, and I walked through the apartment, so I got to see where she lives, opened the front door, went to the hallway, went to the elevator, and rode the elevator down. It was actually programmed in that I could go down that way. And I was like, oh, no, they're already doing all the fun little extra world-building stuff. And, yeah, then I went out on the street, and she can't web-sling, but instead she has a little, like, she's kind of like an inventor, and she has this hammer that will turn into, like, a Segway. And so I'm on the streets in this little Segway.
Oh, Segway, okay.
Yeah, and I found a random group of thugs and beat them up, and again, it's context-sensitive Spider-Man Arkham Asylum combat, but it's a completely different weapon. And in the fight, I knocked over a guy, and he dropped a crowbar, picked up the crowbar, and now I have a completely different moveset with the crowbar.
Oh, okay.
You know, different animations. You still play the same basic way, right? Attack and encounter. But, like, and then at the end, I just threw the crowbar to knock out the last guy, and then finishing moved him, turns the thing back in her scooter back into a hammer, and just ground pounds him. And I was like, okay, you guys get this. And then I only got about 10 seconds with the final character when I swapped to her. And her thing is, she's a cop, and she's just arresting, like, she's in the middle of an arrest, handing it over, putting a criminal over into the thing. And I was like, I like these cool little transitions that show us little things about their lives. So it is exactly what it appears to be. That said, in the free realm, I think everything did play a little less cleanly than Spider-Man. Or a little less cleanly than GTA. Like, there, when I was doing the driving sequence, for example, in the story mode, when I was in control of the car, I found that the game was fighting me. Because what it was doing is we were actually on rails.
Oh, yeah.
It took me a while to figure out. So if I ever tried to do a turn too tight or too slow, like, it would pull me back onto course, which I would overcorrect for, right?
Oh.
And so I was, like, doing weird S's, and I was like, why is this happening? And I'm like, oh, I'm actually on rails. I'm not really driving this car. They didn't want me to be able to, like, you know, accidentally go left and get that thing where it's like, you left the mission area.
Right, start over. Yeah.
You know, that kind of BS. And then with the shooting, I don't know, like, again, I don't know if this is an accessibility option that was turned on, but if I aimed even in the general direction of an enemy, it snapped to them.
Okay.
Like, really snapped to them. To the point where I was just like, oh, this is okay. Because I was even trying to shoot the tires of the trucks, to like of the cars chasing me, to just take everybody out at once. And sometimes it would just snap up to the guy leaning out of the window.
Oh.
And I was like, maybe, but that could just be an accessibility option they had turned up for TGS.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe that's not how it really is when you play it. But,
do we know the platforms for this game already?
Well, here's the, I was playing on a PC.
Yeah.
So that we know for sure. Originally, long ago in the way, way before times when it was originally announced, it was supposed to be, you know, like similar to like Genshin, where you can play it on your phone or your PlayStation or PC or whatever.
That's what, when you talk about the snapping and the on rail stuff, I wonder if that just that makes it easier for mobile phone players,
right?
You know,
and like again from that point on, they've never said, oh no, it's no longer on phones. But at the same time, just watch a trailer and tell me how that runs on a phone, because how? So maybe, or maybe they'll just have like a massively pared down version for the phone where there's not 10 cars on the road, there's one, you know, kind of thing. Or, and the explosion effects are animated GIFs instead of particle effects. Like, I don't know how they're going to do it. But they have not announced that it's not on phones.
Okay.
So we will see.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's taking a lot of these like older, or well, not older necessarily, but like seminal games, and just being like unabashedly stealing their homework, and it's fun. Like, it's probably the game I'm most excited for, and like, given that the booth, you know, literally, I went there from the moment the doors opened. I was the last person in line before they cut off the line, and they basically have just been opening the line once an hour to fill it up. And so and they won't allow you to line up or loiter in the area.
Sure.
But everybody's trying to be really inconspicuous as they wait to go. And but then like they open it up and then everybody floods in and they count off like, you know, 40 people and then they close the line again for the next hour. It's like as far as non, you know, Capcom, no, Konami, not PlayStation, like as far as non big name game company stuff, like,
yeah,
it is the most popular booth I've seen by far.
Yeah, and certainly walking around the venue, you see a lot of people wearing that backpack. They're giving out those special backpacks with the character on it.
Yeah, it's a taffy backpack that when you open it, she lifts her sunglasses because the sunglasses are like the snap that closes the bag. But they're backpacks.
Yeah,
they're not like shoulder bags. They're backpacks.
Yeah, backpack.
And those aren't, you don't even get those for playing. No, you have to go in a completely separate line, which is also very long.
Yeah.
And to get it. But, like, people are lining up. And then they also have, like, a life-size statue of Taffy, the bunny girl, standing on top of, like, a defeated SCP subway train with, like, giant razor claws. But the funny thing is, you won't even see it because the crowd blocks off, like, maybe 30-40% of the statue. All you can see is Taffy standing up really high.
Yeah.
Which is funny. And also very, like, I know that Anant has been, like, a big kind of viral hit online, especially if you're into the more anime game scene, if you like your Hoyoverse and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this. This is the news that came out, I believe, in Famitsu about, like, the day before TGS started, where they came out and announced, yeah, this was going to be a gacha game. We have cut the gacha. There is no more gacha elements. Every character you get for free just for playing. And it looks like they're going more of the GTA 5 or GTA Online model, which is, you know, you want a new car? You pay for it. You want new cosmetics? You pay for it. Like, that's how you do your real-world money spend. But, you know, I'm not sure whether it's a good idea or it's a, you know, it's a bold move, Cotton. Let's see how it turns out.
Yeah.
But I hope it works. Gosh, I would love if more games didn't go down the gacha rabbit hole.
I find gacha mechanics just exhausting. Like, when I play a game and something like that opens up, and if I open the menu and I can see the menu has room for it, I'm just kind of like, I just want to buy a game and play the game. I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I think most people are okay with how GTA Online works because, yeah, you could grind out the cash and buy any car in the game if you really, really wanted to. Or you could, you know, use the credit card, the most powerful thing in video gaming, and just buy your darn car. But, like, I much prefer that business model to, hey, let's get these kids hooked on Gamba and, you know, prime them for that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, like, big win in my opinion. And like I said, it played... Again, we're obviously still months and months away.
Yeah.
And they're going to be adding lots and lots more characters. But was it a little rough around the edges? Yes. Was it perfectly playable? Absolutely. Would I play it today? Yeah, sure. I'm sure I'd dump hundreds of hours into it. Yeah.
Well, thank you. Thank you for bringing to my attention, because I had no idea about this game. You told me the title. I was like, what is it? What is the title? Because it kind of sounds like Anata, which is just like a very...
You.
Yeah, a very normal Japanese pronoun. And, you know, but you know, it's Ananta.
Which I believe is a Hindu word.
It sounds like, it sounds Buddhist in nature.
I seem to have remembered something like that it kind of, I don't want to talk about what it is because I don't remember. I don't want to half remember something and come off looking really
the
stupid.
The viewers can read it.
But I do believe, you can look it up. It's out there. People have talked about what it actually
viewers.
Means.
Listeners are out there. Look up Ananta and tell us what the etymology of that word is. Tell us its roots. And be sure to include any notes about the kanji, because it's written in kanji that don't spell out Ananta normally. So.
Yeah, the Japanese is, they use Mugendai. Yes. Mugen Dai, because it used to be called Project Mugen in Japanese.
Well, I object to that because the name Mugen is taken. You cannot have a Project Mugen. We already have a Mugen. It's a very popular game. We don't need another one.
Right, and I think that's the problem. I think that's why they changed it. They just did not want to confuse people.
No. We can't do that. Sorry.
Yeah.
Well, we could keep talking, but honestly, I don't want to take any more of your time, Richard. We are still here at TGS, and there's more work to be done.
There is.
So before we wrap up here, Richard, do you want to tell people who are listening where they might find your work on the internet if you want to do that?
Yes, no, I absolutely do. If you're interested about like what we talked about or the other games I played here, I'll have many, many hands-on previews over at animenewsnetwork.com. In addition to this, I played a lot of Capcom games. I played, pretty much everything under the sun that I could get my hands on. And I'll have Neo. I did Neo. I did... everything I could try, you know?
Yeah.
And I'll have as many of those reviews up as I can in the coming days and weeks. And, and if you want to follow me on the hell site known now as quote-unquote X, and we all call Twitter, I'm over there as Biggest in Japan, all one word. That's about it.
All right. Thank you very much. And this episode won't go up until October, so I'm sure whatever you write about the show will be online by the time this audio goes out.
Okay, good. Easily accessible.
Yes.
For anyone who's interested in more about hands-on with Ananta or craziness of Resident Evil 9.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you very much, Richard.
Sure. It was great to be here.
Hello, welcome back to Retronauts, and welcome to the lovely skyscraper offices of Hamster Corporation. And we're here talking with the head of Hamster Corporation and many other people. Maybe everyone could just introduce themselves. Well, I'm Diamond Fight, you know me, but maybe we could all just introduce ourselves. Just so, chiko shokai shite, onegai shimasu. Sorry with the voice you'll hear very often. We have a translator here today, so...
Nice to meet you. I'm Midori Yusa, the interpreter.
Thank you very much. And, onegai shimasu.
Hai. Boku wa gomenasai, eigo ga hanasenai desu kedo.
Daijoubu desu. Hai.
Hamster no chachou shiteimasu. Hamada to moushimasu. Yoroshiku onegai shimasu.
Hai.
I'm the president of the hamster, Hamada Satoshi.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Melis, and I'm responsible for overseas promotion in Hamster Corporation. Nice to meet you.
All right. Thank you so much.
ハムスターで営業宣伝の担当をしております中島と申します。よろしくお願いします。
はい。
He's Nakajima, like who does sales for the hamster.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having us here to talk about hamster and all the work that you do. I noticed in the lobby, I saw your Guinness record, you know, commemorating your many years of selling games every week, maishu, every week having a new game, which is remarkable, I think. Suburashito mamas. So that's one of the reasons I'd like to talk to you all today. But if we could start first with you, Hamada-san, just about your background, like who are you and what brought you here to this tower?
まず僕は、東芝 EMI というレコード会社に行って。
So Hamada-san started, I started like the career from like Toshiba EMI. They had a record, like section, and then like it moved. They also had like a game section in the record section. However, like they had to shut down the business like for that section. So like that's how he started the Hamster. And like it's been 26 years, and last year they moved to Setagaya, which because that's the place where Hamada-san lives and like he likes. Also, like this building, like they moved to this building from last year.
Thank you. Is Setagaya your hometown? Have you zutto Setagaya?
So this hi, 実家も Setagaya です。
Oh.
はい。
So his parents' house are also Setagaya, so he have like lots of attachments for Setagaya.
Ah, okay, I understand. So, did you have a background in video game making or just a general interest in games when you were younger, and you decided, oh, I want to work with games?
So, like, his parents were a little bit strict about video games. He couldn't play video games as a child, so that's why he started to go to Game Center to play arcade games. That's how he have, like, feelings for arcade games.
I see. Did you have a favorite for your arcade experience, Ichiban?
So it's really difficult for me to pick my favorite arcade. There is 480 titles for arcade games or archives so far, and I love them all.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe you can ask this. Why Hamster? You know, why call the company Hamster? Was it a favorite pet, or do you want to live inside a ball? Why did you choose Hamster for your company?
Actually, the company's name doesn't come from the animal hamster. It comes from people's names. So, like, my name is Hamada, and, like, there was another other people who was called Muto, stands for Mu, and, like, Suzuki, that stands for S, hamster. So, and then, like, there was multiple other people, and that became a hamster.
Oh, okay. So just worked out that way, the names. I understand. Okay. So I was curious about Hamster's work before Arcade Archives. I noticed you published a lot of games in the past. You know, as you said, the company has been here since 1999. So I wondered if you could tell me a little bit about the early days of Hamster and those kinds of work you were doing.
So we had multiple games such as the Konbini, like where you can run your own Konbini store. But like we always tried to do like arcade games back from PS1. So like for PlayStation, like we did Arcade Hits, PlayStation 2, and like we tried three times, but which wasn't that much successful, but we started like Arcade Archives from 11 years ago, which became a hit with like 480 titles, and I guess like it was our fourth luck.
I see. Well, I actually wanted to ask a little bit about some early games like the Konbini. I have an interest in the Simple series, and when I saw the Konbini, I wondered if there was a maybe there might be a future for the Konbini, because I feel like those sort of games are still very popular. I still see indie games now about making convenience stores and running convenience stores. And I think Japanese convenience stores especially are popular around the world now. The image of a Japanese convenience store is now very popular. So I wondered if there might be a future for Zakonbini.
So currently, we are focused on arcade archives, and we want to like put all the energies into the arcade archives. So we don't plan on anything for the Konbini series at the moment, but like we want to publish more arcade archives games as much as possible.
I was also curious because I looked up that Hamster published in Japan the video game You Don't Know Jack, which was still is a popular quiz game in English, but you published it here in Japan with Masatoshi Hamada, who I know is very popular in Japan. I don't think our American listeners know him, but I wondered if you could talk about that and how that happened to get a very big star to play video game quiz voice.
Actually, for the You Know Jack game, it was made by Yoshimoto comedy company for Japan, and Hamster had a relationship with Yoshimoto for a while, so that's how like Hamster was able to publish that game.
And there's no relation between you and Hamada Masatoshi. No relation.
Hi.
Okay, just same name. That's okay. I get it. Okay, well then maybe we can talk about Arcade Archives. So, you know, you used to publish all these different games, the Konbini and other things, and you have a history of publishing arcade games, but I wonder if you could tell me what made you focus almost, as you said, almost exclusively now on arcade games and this Arcade Archives project. Like, why did everything else sort of fall back and like, okay, we're now 100% full power arcade games all the time?
So like for Arcade Archives, like we feel like there's two unique points for Arcade Archives, because like we release every week, which we have been like starting from 2017 March 3rd, which is the release date for Switch, and it's been 8.5 years for every users. And for the other point, like it's because like we release like revival like every title, any kind of title. And like for any kind of title, like I would like to follow up that like we do any kind of series which are like could be really famous, or it could be like not that much of a spotlight kind of game, which I think it's unique. So like I guess like when you revival like a series, like people usually start from the famous series, but like I feel like we want to release like the titles which have been like attached to like people's personal emotions. So we try like, even like if it's like not like a famous, like not much spotlight games, like some kid might have like played it for like forever and ever. So that's why we focus on like the not so much popular titles as well. So releasing every week popular title and unpopular title, which is really hard, especially like checking the process and everything. So like the major titles, like there's lots of resources, a lot of data is like preserved, but for like the minor ones, unfortunately there's not much information, and like we need to do a lot of research, which is could take a lot of time. So but like we want to continue doing this every week and deliver it to the users. So that's why we focus on this project 100% at the moment.
So I'm curious, when this began back in 2017, did you know at that time we are going to do this every week and we're not going to stop and that's it? Or did you say, we'll try this for 1 month, 2 months, and then maybe we'll have to change direction?
So when the Nintendo Switch got released, like, I was excited to release it every week, and I had the passion for that. But whenever, like, there's a new bug or, like, a schedule jam or whatever, any kind of trouble, like, comes up, I always thought, like, maybe I can't or I have to stop. But, like, always there was a supporting staff helping me, and, like, as a team, like, we overcome this situation, and I'm happy for that.
Thank you. Oh, we were joined by a new person here. I don't know if you want to introduce yourself. ちょっと自己紹介お願いします。
はい。私は株式会社ハムスターの武藤です。創設メンバーの一人で。
So I'm Muto, one of the original members who started Hamster. I do many things, but I'm also like involved in the promotion process.
Oh, okay. So the ha hamster and the mu hamster. Yes. Oh, okay.
Hi.
Yeah, 2/3. That's a lot. Exciting. So we talked about the Arcade Archives and how you've been doing this for so long. I know there's many variables, but what would you say is the typical schedule? You know, how long does it take to go from we want to release this game to we are releasing the game? What's an example of that?
Arcade Archives, 大体開発期間どれぐらいだと思いますか？
How long do I think? I would guess 6-7 months, maybe?
はい、だいたい正解です。
Oh, okay, はい、I got it.
はい、よく毎週やってるから1週間で作ってるの?
So, like, you guessed it right. Like, we usually take 6-7 months for the research and everything, development. Lots of people think that because we release it weekly, like, people think, like, we only prepare for 1 week, but that's not true. And some of the long titles, like, long processing titles, takes, like, 2 years. So, like, once we pick the title, we set the title, we do a tons of research and all that.
Okay, so it's not a South Park situation, I understand.
で、まずはそのタイトルの調査をして、当時のアーケードゲームが動いていた基盤を探します。で、その基盤から、データを吸い出したり、
So like when we pick the title, we usually search for the hardware that it was used, and like we usually likesuck up from like the hardware the datas.
So Kiban is the arcade board, I guess. Yeah. All right. So Kiban arcade board. I get it. Okay. So obviously there's many examples, but at this point, how do you choose? Are you choosing the games? Like we want this, or are rights holders coming to you and saying, "Hello, Hamster, can you do this for us? Can you? Because you have." You're very famous now. I don't know. Is it both ways, or are you choosing what you want?
So, like, it happens both ways. When we first started, obviously, we were the one who was reaching out to the game makers and all that. But, like, since we have been doing it for 11 years, like, luckily, like, sometimes, like, game makers themselves, like, reach out to us.
Can I ask, with Nintendo, what happened? Which way was it with Nintendo? Because that's obviously a very big name. Can you tell me about that?
So Nintendo was always, we were clients, and like we had relationship when we had a bond. So like, and we always had a dream of like doing like Nintendo's arcade games for such a long time. So because of that, we were the ones who reach out to Nintendo so that we can release it when Switch came out.
I guess what I'm talking about is specifically the Nintendo arcade games, I guess what I'm saying. Because at first it was, you know, lots of Neo Geo games and other companies, but then you've released a lot of Nintendo arcade games. Was that part of it?
Okay, so for like Nintendo specific arcade games, like, so for instance, like there's Donkey Kong, which was released remastered in multiple like hardwares, but unfortunately like the arcade version was slightly different. But like I know like lots of kids like played it as a childhood, and like Nintendo also felt like strongly and agreed that like they wanted to have it like as part of like the arcade game project. So like we got the permission and that's how we released it.
Thank you. I noticed here in the room you have a lot of items from the Nintendo Museum. Actually, I'm wearing a shirt from Nintendo Museum also. I'm wearing a Virtual Boy shirt, for the record, because I'm virtually a boy. And I was wondering, because I've been there, and I'm kind of surprised the museum doesn't have more arcade games. I wonder, were you surprised? Have you been to Nintendo Museum? Were you surprised that it's mostly home games and not arcade games?
I specifically think that, so I went to the museum, yes. And that's why we have, like, lots of the cushions and plushies of, like, from the Nintendo Museum. And actually, like, there was machines from the arcade games, like, exhibited, like, in the museum. And also, of course, Famicom and, like, other, like, hardwares, like, as a main thing. And I think, like, it was overall a really good museum.
I'm curious, what kind of feedback do you get from publishers about Arcade Archives? Are you getting a lot of questions from them or from users? Because you have so many releases. I wonder what's that like?
Yes, we get like lots of feedbacks. And especially since we do a revivals of so many titles, we try to recreate the environment as much as possible since, especially like for television, for instance, like it changed a lot. So to make it like more precisely closer to the environment on those days, we get a feedback from like the original maker saying that maybe if you could like adopt it like in this way or adjust it in this way. And we use those feedback so that we can recreate it 100% as much as we can.
I'm also very curious what, if any, feedback you get from younger players, because I know the Switch has a very young install base. Like, my kids both have Switches. And I wonder if you hear anything back from young people who didn't know these games. You know, they're younger than the arcade games, and maybe they're discovering these games through Arcade Archives that they never would have seen otherwise.
Actually, we don't have much feedback from the young players, and we think that that's the point where we can improve. We want more young people and overseas people to know about our gorgeous archive.
Well, actually, speaking of overseas, I was very curious, you know, now that Arcade Archives is known in many countries, I wondered, to this point, it's mostly been Japanese games. I wondered if maybe there would be more Arcade Archives games from other countries. I don't know, Kaigai Akeaka or Yoge Akeaka, some kind of expansion in that regards.
So, like, currently we only published from 24 Japanese makers arcade games and no overseas arcade games. But, like, since our motto is to revival all the arcade games, if we ever have the chance for an opportunity, we definitely want to revival overseas arcade games too.
Well, if you're taking requests, I think one great example would be a game called Narc. It's an American game from the 80s about the drug war. And it was very famous, and it's before Mortal Kombat, but it uses real people in the game. And I think that would be a wonderful example. I don't know if you want to write that down, but...
そのゲームは知らないので、ちょっと今度調べてみます。それもリリースできたらいいですよね。
It is very violent, just a warning. The boruku is so wicked. It's, I don't know. As a kid, I loved it. So, obviously, there is a finite number of arcade games. There's only so many games. But do you think the Arcade Archives series can just go on indefinitely? Do you think you'll ever run out? Like, oh, we have no more games. Do you think that might happen?
So we released 480 titles for these 11 years. But like when we first originally started, our goal was to release 800 titles, actually. And we think that is possible. So we want to produce more and more games as possible and continue. However, like there's a strong possibility that it will run out, but like we don't want to run out. So like since like there's more new arcade games coming out these days, we want to feature the new ones too. And we want to support the new arcade games too.
I was wondering if you could tell me why you switched to Arcade Archives 2 and if there'll be more sequels, Arcade Archives 3 or 4 or 5. Maybe talk about why I have a 2 or 3 or whatever.
Since we have been like releasing like so many games for such a long time, our trouble that we could have we wanted to overcome with was the platform. Like since like Switch changed to Switch 2 and like PS5 came out, there's possibility of like PS6 and PS7 in the future, and we want to produce as much as possible, like even like overlapping platforms. And like to continue this like new challenge, we wanted to give out the message that even the platform changes, it continues.
On that note, I was wondering, after so many years of digital releases, Arcade Archives every week, I wanted to ask you about the physical versions. I know I've noticed now, at least in Japan, you have sort of Arcade Archives collections on discs or cartridge. I wondered what brought about that idea to do physical releases of the Arcade Archives.
So for the cartridge arcade games, like there's Taito ones and like the SNK Sun ones, but like it's not all like published from sold from Hamster, and we do get lots of like requests for like the package like physical cartridge games, and we do want to do it in the future, but currently we are so focused on the download games. But like we do have like a dream that to make it come true one day.
Would we possibly see like an Arcade Archives Mini, you know, like Nintendo and Sony and Sega have made the little consoles, even SNK made a mini Neo Geo. I have one. It's very cute. Do you think you'll have a maybe Hamster, like a little Hamster arcade machine? Looks like a hamster.
Yeah, we do talk about like mini like arcade physical games, but unfortunately like we just talk about it at the moment since we are so focused on the downloadable ones at the moment, but we do talk about it.
All right, maybe one last question here. I may be unfair question, but is there any game in the 480 Arcade Archives releases that you are still surprised that, oh, we got to release this one? Maybe just whether it's too famous or too small, but inside you're like, oh, I can't believe we got to release this game.
So like we discussed earlier, but like I'm still surprised that we got a chance to collaborate with Nintendo. Nintendo have such a high like quality, like technology and everything. So they could have done it by themselves, but they let us do the Arcade Archives, and I'm still happy about it. And I want to follow up that not just Nintendo, even Konami, Bandai, Koei, Tecmo, and like Taito and SNK Sonic, and all the companies, like they're such a big, like powerful company than us. So like we're grateful that like they let us revival all the games through Arcade Archives.
All right. Well, thank you again for your time. And I want to wrap up here. And I'm just curious if anybody, especially you in the promotion department, is there any sort of, I don't know, maybe a hamster stream or hamster social media or something that you want to let our listeners know about that you, as a way to get news out to people?
日本語で。ああ、どうぞ。はい。最近はあのハムスターのインスタグラムを始めまして、で、さっき、So we recently started an Instagram account for young users. So definitely follow us on Instagram.
Thank you. Anyone else? Any personal things you want to share? Koji no mono demo?
何か最後に言いたいことありますでしょうか。
何かあればよろしくお願いします。日本のゲームもよろしくお願いします。
Thank you so much for today.
あ、じゃあ、あの、最後に僕の方から、あの、さっきお話した通り僕らは、
So, I want to say that like we revival like arcade games and like we want to do as much as possible and our motto is to tell that to younger audience the classic games that was precious to us and also like we want to tell that to the overseas too and maybe like the art is not as pretty as these modern games but like the game is so much fun and we want everybody to play it and we want everybody to spread it to the word about arcade games.
All right, well thank you very much for your time. So thank you for inviting us here, really appreciate it. ありがとうございました。
ありがとうございました。
Hello, I'm back in my house, and I'm here to tell you about three indie games that I played at Tokyo Game Show that I'd like to highlight, because with the interview segments and the people at the show, I've already covered all the big stuff. So let's just talk about the indie stuff that we didn't have time for, starting with Sobakistan, the Land of Dogs. They're calling it a darkly satirical narrative immersion in a closed-off totalitarian dog state. And what I want you to imagine is, imagine a pixel art adventure game taking place in the Soviet Union, except it's a Soviet Union full of canines. Everyone's a dog. Except you. Your character is a foreign journalist, so I guess you're a frog. And you're visiting this country for the first time. They've opened their borders. It's a historic day. They've decided to practice the funeral of their revered leader. I don't know if it's a real thing people do, but they do it in this game. And you walk around, you click on things, and it's kind of an absurd environment. You see people doing impossible things. And if you look at things the wrong way, or if you go the wrong way down the street, you might get warned, you might not get warned, but you can get arrested. And when you're arrested, the game ends. I got arrested. My game ended. But the writing and the art is pretty clever, and so I'm quite curious as to how this is going to turn out. I don't know how many endings they're going to go for. Can getting arrested in different spots change the ending? Or is it just, do you want to get arrested or not get arrested? I don't know. Is it like a King's Quest thing? Anyway, Sobakistan, the Land of Dogs. Check that one out. Next up, I don't know how to pronounce this word. Militsioner? M-I-L-I-T-S-I-O-N-E-R. They're calling it a Kafka-esque immersive sim. And how I'd explain this game is, you're exploring a small town under surveillance from the cops. Okay, not cops, just cop, singular, one cop. A giant cop. Like, not like a big guy, I mean like a giant, like he towers over the entire area. And you can talk to him and he can talk to you, and everyone in the town knows he's there, and they know you're here, and they know that he's watching you. So it's hard to deal with people and hard to deal with him, but you have to figure it out, and you can do things the nice way, you can do things the hard way, you can steal stuff, you can be violent, or you can be kind and helping. Seems like all these different approaches can get you to a different ending. So again, very curious how many outcomes this game could possibly have. It looks really nice. It's 3D environment, it's not pixel art, but I like it. It looks like, the town has character, even though it's a very small town. And I don't know what's going on with this giant cop. Are giant cops ACAB? Probably. AGAB? And last one I want to highlight is Waxwing. They're calling it a real-time death-driven kinetic waltz. And easy way to explain this is, it's a light gun game kind of like Gumshoe. Remember Gumshoe for the NES? Where you don't shoot things on screen, you're shooting your character and making him jump? Well, this game, the character is moving from left to right, and you shoot where you want the character to go. Except, when you shoot the screen, you make a little, like, ball of fire, and the character is drawn to the fire. But if the character touches the fire, they're out, and you lose. Start over. Well, there's checkpoints, but still, you have to go back. It's a loss.
So you need to be constantly shooting new places to lure them in the right direction, but you have to shoot again before they touch your last shot. And what makes this very interesting is that you can play it in co-op, which limits you, so you have to take turns shooting the screen. So you and your partner have to really establish a rapport and get a rhythm going, and it's pretty challenging, but it's pretty cool. And there's a lot of weird stuff on the screen. Like, the first stages was the moth, and I get it, moth to a flame. But then the second stages was, like, a person surrounded by other, like, weird people, and there were cars, and shooting the cars with the cars on fire. I don't know what to make of this. The developers told me it's already available as, like, an arcade installation in Brooklyn with custom, like, light guns. The version I saw at TGS was just kind of off-the-shelf light guns in a regular TV. But still, it looks good. It plays well. I'd be very curious how this, if they're going for a global release or not. I don't own a light gun, but for a weird game like this, I might get a light gun because it's weird. I like it. I like weird games. And I also just want to highlight that this year's TGS was extremely crowded, as alluded to when I talked to John. The business days both had over 50,000 guests. And to put that in perspective, when I started going to TGS, you know, 15 years ago, business days usually had about 20, 25,000 people, maybe 30,000 if it was a really busy year. Maybe way less if it was not a busy year. I went there from some dry spells, if you remember. Now, in recent years, I believe they've been selling tickets to the business days, which have gone up in attendance. But still, 2 years ago, it was still about 30,000 people per business day. Last year, it was about 40,000. This year, over 50,000. It's kind of getting crazy. And it's funny how, as the business days go up, the public days kind of go down. But the public days are still busier than the business days because they're much cheaper and they're the weekend. Of course, they're busier. And all this is leading up to next year, where they've already announced they're going to do a 5-day show over a holiday weekend. So Thursday, Friday, business days, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, public days. Clearly, they're looking for a 300,000 plus person show. I mean, if I've got work to do there, I'll go for work, but it's really hard to do work when you're in a room with 50,000 people and most of them are just there to look around and take pictures and just be overwhelmed by it all. Where I'm trying to like play some games so I can write about them or maybe interview a developer. You know, that's an imbalance. But hey, I don't run the event. They don't give me a vote. All right, we're going to wrap things up today. Thank you very much to all my guests, everyone down at Hamster, John Linneman, Richard Eisenbeiss, and Midori Yusa, who was my interpreter at the Hamster interview. Thank you, everyone, for your help. I really appreciate it. This was a fun episode to record. I always enjoy spending time in Tokyo. Even if I don't enjoy Tokyo culturally, I prefer Osaka. That's right, I said it. I chose the best place to live in Japan. And that's my unbiased opinion. This has been Retronauts. Thank you very much for listening to Retronauts. If you are listening to Retronauts and you did not pay us for this episode, thank you very much for listening to Retronauts. However, if you give us $3 a month over at patreon.com/retronauts, you get all our regular episodes 1 week early at a higher audio quality. If you spend $5 a month on patreon.com, which is just $2 more than $3, it's very basic math. What do you get? You get all the episodes a week early. You get exclusive episodes, 2, sometimes 3 exclusive episodes every month. You get columns from me every week. You get a community episode every month. You get access to our Discord where we're chatting about everything that can happen in there. Very fun. Very civil. I've been told it's a very nice Discord compared to other Discords. How about that? Retronauts is doing good on the Discord front. Anyway, I invite you to take part in our community and support us because that's how our episodes get made. We are coming up. This is 2025. We're coming very close to our 20th year, 2006, 2026. It's coming soon. Yes. But for now, that's a wrap. My name is Diamond Fight. You can find me on the internet by looking for Fight Club, F-E-I-T, my last name, C-L-U-B, English word you already know. Have my own website, fightclub.me. Otherwise, look up social media. I'm Fight Club on most services, Letterboxd, YouTube, Twitch, all those things. And I don't know when I'll next be attending an event, but you know I'll be back on the Retronauts podcast very soon. So, good night.